Welcome one and all once again to Nerds on the Rocks episode 94. We're going to have some assembly today, but before we get there, let's introduce our members of S.H.I.E.L.D. We have Mr. Elias.
We're not a team, we're a time bomb.
We have Mr. Reed.
Unnecessary quote from the movie. See, I went meta with it.
We have Mr. Tilton.
Hey, I'm really bad at thinking of a good funny things last minute, so I was just going to be like, John Smash, but then I realized that, like, I'm just a little skinny kid, and that doesn't fit me at all. So, hi.
Mark butted off, and he became a superhero. So, yes, this week we're going to talk about The Avengers, a movie that's been 5 years in the making, and five prequel films, or whatever you want to call them. So, since Anthony saw it first, do you want to give us opening impressions?
I'm sure this will get talked about a lot throughout the show, but I think Joss Whedon did a very good job of bringing all these heroes together, most of which were established in previous movies, bringing them together in an ensemble superhero team movie, and made a really great movie out of it. Because I'm a fan of the comics, and I've enjoyed the other Marvel Studio films, and I really enjoyed The Avengers. It was great.
Okay. John?
Yeah, I think this is like the best summer movie that has come out in possibly my time of going to Blockbuster films, like as someone who can, like, you know, someone who can go to the movies and watch any movie he wants. I think this was like the best way you could possibly open a summer. It made me more excited for other movies this summer. Kind of similar to the way Iron Man did back in 2008, which is funny because with that film we got Dark Knight for that summer, and then this summer we get Dark Knight Rises. And so I think it's just going to be really good financially for the films this summer because everyone's really excited about movies right now.
It kind of sucks, yeah, though, because there's really not much to follow up on that in May. It's Battleship.
Does it matter? Because I'm just going to see The Avengers every weekend in May. I'm glad there's no other movie coming out.
Well, I'm glad
I don't have to go to Men in Black 3 because all the other movies don't seem interesting.
Yeah, but it would be nice if, like, you know, people are kind of excited to go to the movies and you just kind of get, like, this thing instead of, like, Avengers, and then you don't have anything again until, like, Prometheus, which is a month away.
Yeah, you know, I guess that is true. I guess that is because even, you know, as poorly received as it was by the fans, again, when Iron Man came out, at least we had, like, Indiana Jones or something to look forward to.
Let's not use that as what we had as a good thing to look forward to.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like we didn't know it was going to be terrible. I guess we could have predicted it, but maybe Men in Black 3 will be all right. I don't know.
I'm sure. I think Men in Black, I think it will be decent. I think it will be fun. I just don't think it's going to be... Like, I think, you know, you said starting off with The Avengers, it does set a high benchmark for the rest of the summer, and I think very few movies... I mean, June is jam-packed with movies that I think are going to be up there with Prometheus and Brave, and, you know, even we have different opinions on it, but Spider-Man comes out at the tail... Well, it comes out the first...
Yeah, in July, there's Batman.
Yeah, July has Spider-Man and then the Expendables wraps up this summer. It's a decent slate of movies. It's just that May has nothing aside from its Avengers to get excited for.
Which Marvel and Disney must be so happy about.
I assume I would be ecstatic with $700 million they've made already.
Yeah. It just no studio probably wants to put a film up against Avengers because, like, every film that's out now, compared to Avengers, it's not going to make much for, like, the next month or so.
I think
going to be rewatching the Avengers as well and stuff like that. So
I think Dark Shadows might have done all right, but now I don't have any faith that it's going to make a lot of money, no matter how good the reviews on it are.
They're not. The reviews are actually pretty bad on it.
I mean, usually major movies get a breathing room, but usually it's like 2 weeks because it's like you have the week ahead of it and the week after are usually pretty empty, and then 2 weeks you get something new. But, yeah.
My friend works for a movie theater up in the Midwest, Celebration Cinema, and he said that 3 out of every 4 tickets sold that weekend was for the Avengers, and they had 37 movies play.
You can get the box office. Avengers for opening weekend did $207 million.
Yeah, and then the next one was 8.
Yeah.
isn't that a record? That has to be a record.
It has. Well,
right, 207 million?
No,
no,
oh, no
that's
I
a record,
mean,
but
that
the biggest
record,
gap.
But biggest
it has
gap.
To be the biggest gap. It's the biggest opening.
Well, I mean, you could have a big opening that also something that makes 50 million or something like that.
Yeah, but I was going to say, but there's no way that you can have something that, I mean, that's literally nearly a $200 million gap. No movie's made more than that opening weekend, so there could be no gap like that. but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. What about you, Nikias? What are your thoughts on the movie?
I agree with what you all have been saying, that it's actually, when people talk about summer popcorn movies, this is kind of the quintessential summer popcorn movie done right. Mm-hmm. Like, people would always talk about Transformers as being like, oh, it's a sort of the Jaws or Star Wars. And I think they, like, Jaws and Star Wars are like the closest things to compare this to, or this to them, actually. In that, it's not a very complicated plot, it's just a fun movie. Like, if you want to be a dick, you can nitpick the shit out of this movie. Like, why? Why would you do that? why would you, though? Like what's the point? The point of the movie isn't like, oh, this guy does this and this guy does that. It's why they're what they're doing while they get there. Like, it's Robert Downey Jr. being an asshole all over the place and being great at it. It's Scarlett Johansson surprising the shit out of me and actually being fun and good as a character in a movie. It's about Mark Ruffalo knocking it the fuck out of the park.
he
literally and figuratively.
The guy who people came out of this movie most, like, I mean, I think part of it is just because people were burnt on the first two Hulk movies, even though I think Incredible Hulk's a great movie.
This is kind of what they've been leading up to with getting the Hulk right, because like, Ang Lee's Hulk was quite long and not very good, and Incredible Hulk was a bit better, and now the Avengers has finally given us a good on-screen portrayal of both Bruce Banner and
actually,
the Hulk.
I think it's actually still a little bit more than that, too, because I was thinking about this, and I think the Hulk on screen works a lot better with, like, in the Avengers setting, because even if they had the quality Hulk they have in his own movie, I still don't think it'll work, because, like, the way the Hulk worked in Avengers was he was kind of, like, this brute force that's kind of dumb, and he's just, like, bursting in at these surprise moments continually, and it was always awesome because he was there in the midst of everything, and if he was the focus, I still don't think it'll work even with the quality that he had in this, because I think he worked really well in that team setting.
I was going to agree with that. I was going to say that I think one of the things is that he has other people to play off of. Part of what the Hulk movies, especially the Incredible Hulk, is that Bruce Banner is kind of he isolates himself because he fears for what happens if he's around people. But when you have people who have similar power levels to him, and people like Tony Stark who can be a dick to him, he plays well because he has characters to interact with all the time. I mean, in Incredible Hulk, I think he interacts with the people at the workplace, Betty and the general, and that's pretty much it for the most of the movie. Here, he's like he's with people the entire time he's interacting. You know, they're all kind of poking fun at him, but he still has something to work off of, even when he becomes the Hulk.
Yeah, I think that's the key part. Like, I think you can have an interesting movie with Bruce Banner, but as soon as he turns into Hulk, I think it's so required that he needs other interactions that you have during those fight scenes. And that's what's so great about the Avengers fight scenes is, like, not only do you have all the cool action, but you have all those characters continue to interact with each other, whereas in the other Marvel films, it kind of just focuses on the action and the character interactions. You know, they're kind of there, but they're always the basic bad guy versus good guy. And this has them all the good guys interacting with each other the entire time, and with the villains as well, so
I want to touch on that in a little bit. First, I don't know if I mentioned it on this podcast, or I know I was talking to my friends about it, that the reason the Hulk has always kind of not worked on screen, despite, like, the movies being okay, is that there's really only one or two plots you can do with him, conceivably, as a solo character. He's either on the run, or he is against a bigger, like, you know, another giant monster. And that's it. You can't really do much else with the Hulk as a character, and that's not going to make a very exciting film once you've done it once.
Now,
so that's why he works as, like, this side character. Like, you can do, like, you put him against an overwhelming force that does technically try him in this movie a little bit. And you can have him bounce off characters like Tony Stark or Captain America or
Star.
Thor, yeah.
Now, all that being said, I think we can all pretty much agree that after the Avengers, now Disney and Marvel are like, hey, we're definitely doing that new Hulk movie.
Well, you see, and I think he's going to run into the same problem again, where it's people like his portrayal of the Hulk, and they like the Hulk in it, but you're going to run into the same thing. Like, what do you do with the Hulk for 2 hours on his own?
Yeah. And I guess, well, you see, and this is my other problem is I come to these Marvel films, you know, I've read a handful of Marvel comics, but it's never been, I love comics, but I've never been really into capes and cowls and superheroes, stuff like that. And so, you know, I'm just ignorant enough about the way all the comics work that, you know, maybe some of you could speak on if there are these great standalone Hulk comics that they could do, that if they just stuck closer to with what they're doing, they actually could make the most amazing Hulk movie. And it's just stuff I've never thought of. But.
There is one, actually, but it is isolating from the rest of the universe. There is the Planet Hulk story where he gets sent to an alien world, and it's kind of like Gladiator with the Hulk.
I actually tweeted that last night. I'm like, I want to see like either Planet Hulk or World Worlds. That would be awesome, like a Gladiator-type movie with superheroes.
And then, actually, the end of it, with the ending in the comic, it could lead into another Avenger film, because he comes back and he's angry with like the people who sent him there, so...
Yeah,
which aren't technically in the Marvel universe.
I know, that is true, yeah. But they'd have to change it and shit.
I think that's something you'd have to do, like, over 3 or 4 movies.
Yeah, probably.
And the thing is, like, John, there is a bunch of stories that are Hulk stories in the comics that I think would be, that are great, like, standalone ones. But they're all, like I said, they're all, like, very much outside the normal Hulk box. That type of stuff. Like you said, like Planet Hulk, there's one, I think it's called Future Imperfect, where there's the Hulk in the future is like is called the Maestro. He's killed all the other superheroes.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really good story. It's all ones that take him outside of the comfort zone or like give, like there's a, what was the one? It was Bruce Jones did it. It was like a big deal at the time where it was like the Hulk on the run and it was mostly Banner and it was like very much set up like a spy story almost.
It's just funny because
he shaved his head, and so the Hulk was bald. It was actually really well done. But.
I was gonna say it's funny because it really is that like character that steals the show. But when you really stop and think about it, that character who steals the show would probably be awful in its own movie. Like it's like making like a McLovin movie or something. It's like everyone loved McLovin and Superbad, but like if they released a movie just about McLovin, some people might see it, but everyone would probably hate it.
Yeah,
I think rather than doing a Hulk film, they should just follow up on what happens at the end and have him just show up in Iron Man.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Or
Hulk, but as like Tony Stark's buddy.
I would say that. Or
Oh my goodness, that would be.
I was gonna say,
oh my gosh, that needs to happen. Sorry.
I like the dynamic in Earth's Mightiest Hero if they did like a Hulk Hawkeye buddy movie. I don't know.
But with the thing is. With that Iron Man 3, though, Nicholas, is that they want the sequels to be more central on the individual heroes. You know, where the previous, the ones so far, kind of like led into the Avengers. I think the idea is now for the sequels after the Avengers to be more singular, like the first Iron Man movie. So, but it would be cool, though, to see Hulk.
I don't mean like have him Hulk out and like hang out all the time, but like have him, like do like the idea of the shared universe. Like, hey, look, here's Bruce Banner hanging out with Stark. Stark goes to him with a problem or something. Or,
yeah, especially
like,
being at their
like,
kind
of... The people always do it is you would be reading Fantastic Four and Spider-Man would swing by in the background. Nothing to do with the story, he was just there.
Yeah, and I mean, the end of the movie hinted at the fact that, you know, Avengers Tower is being built so they could have Stark visit there and like, hope. Because, you know, I assume he has no place to live since he's always been on the run. So you can have him hanging out.
Notice the Quinjet in there?
Yeah. Wait, at the end?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't know
At the very end, the blueprints Stark's working on in the tower with Pepper, at the very end of the movie, when they pull it out and show the A, yeah, in that hologram, you see a Quinjet in the tower's diagram.
Oh, all right. Oh, cool.
And they can build it off on the fact that it took them forever to get there from the ship, the helicarrier, when he was going to confront Yoki.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we can talk about him, too, because he's the central villain of the movie. And he gets some of the best scenes as well.
He gets the best fucking line in the movie, as far as I'm concerned. Where he calls Scarlett Johansson a cunt. Essential. I was like, holy shit, Joss Whedon, you got away with some...
Well, you can get away with stuff if you're smart about it, because nobody else is going to research it. Hello?
Hello?
I'm still here.
I'm still here. I think Nicholas went.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, he did.
Okay, well, he gets reacquainted with the universe. Yeah, so what did you folks think of Yoki in the movie?
I thought it was great. I loved the beginning of it when he first comes in and you cut to that close-up of him, and then he just has that really sinister-looking grin on his face, and he looks really evil, and then he kicks the shit out of some S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, and it's like, yeah, he's badass, because you don't see that badass side of him in 4 that much, because in 4 it's still kind of like him becoming the villain, as much as like 4 is about 4 becoming the hero, but it's also about Loki becoming the villain, so... And I also, because I like the comics, I just like the fact that they used Loki as, like, the villain in the first Avenger film, since he was the reason they got together in the comics, so that was quite
cool.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to finish my thought. Mewling Quim, awesome. did I get out where I said that all the English majors in the audience went, what the fuck, at the same time?
No.
Okay, yeah, that happens. Me and my friends were all seeing it, and then, like, at that line, everybody else was like, oh, then me and my friend Sarah, who's like super into literature and all, we just were like, oh, at the same time.
Well, it fits in with his character. And I thought that was a great scene as well, because she's actually ended up paying him to find out what she needed to do. And, you know, it's something that I didn't expect. I thought he was actually taking advantage of her, but it worked out well. John, what did you think of the main threat of the film?
The main, like, Loki?
Loki, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was great. I was especially excited because it confirmed that I made a good decision watching the other Marvel films, which I was kind of on the fence about doing, and I asked a friend who saw it at the premiere. I said, hey, should I go and see, like, Captain America and Thor, because I missed those? And he was like, yeah, you can, but it's not necessary, which I agree with. But, man, I was so glad I did, because Loki was a part of Thor, and I didn't know he was going to be the villain at Avengers, because I was kind of trying to avoid spoilers for it, and yeah. But I was so happy, because I thought it really added, you know, continued that relationship between Thor and Loki, which I had really enjoyed in Thor. And brought it to the next level in this, and so I thought it was great, and I thought he was like a perfect choice for, and again, like, I'm ignorant enough of like all the actual Marvel villains that every time they announce one, I'm like, oh cool, who's this, awesome, like I never really know, like, I think like Venom's been like the only villain that I've known going into something ahead of time and be like, oh cool, I know that one.
So I have to ask, and I hate to jump ahead, but what did you think of the end reveal, Dan?
Oh, I was excited because the rest of my theater was excited. Like this one guy,
yeah,
like, row down, like, lost his shit. Like, he couldn't even, like, he was just going bananas, and I was like, well, apparently this is going to be awesome.
So, like, that is some big fuck deal right there.
Yeah.
But I did go and pick up Infinity Gauntlet, so I will be reading that to catch myself with what the deal is. But But yeah, it I always feel like a lesser geek when all that stuff happens. But it makes me excited.
It's kind of cool, but I had that same thing with Thor, I believe, when we came out and nobody knew what did they call it, the Tesseract?
Cosmic. Mm-hmm.
The Cosmic Cube, but like, nobody knew what it was. Like, what was that? I'm like, oh, yeah, it's cool that they're hinting at it, but like, if half your audience comes out and not, I guess part of it is also that people go home and they can wiki or they can Google it and stuff like that, and you know, you'll find stuff like you ended up buying Infinity Gauntlet, which is an awesome story.
What I liked about the Thanos reveal as well, sorry to spoil it, but it's forever expanding on that cosmic universe, which they started doing in 4, because there's whole worlds out there now in the Marvel universe, which they could just like do whatever they want with, which all started back in 4, so.
Yeah, I think that was one of the points we were talking about when Thor came out last year, is the fact that, you know, like, we didn't know how people would kind of you know, take the supernatural elements being introduced into the Marvel Universe and stuff like that. And, you know, Thor was the it needed to exist for people to accept that aliens can invade and there could be other dimensions and stuff like that so easily. And now Thanos expands on it as well. The only disappointment for me is now that it's going to be really hard if DC ever gets their act together to do a Darkseid movie. Darkseid is one of my favorite villains, so...
I love now, too, that, you know, the Marvel film universe is opened up to space, because that's always something when I read a comic and something's taking place in this cosmic realm, like, it just makes me... It always blows my mind, and I've always been like, man, darn these gritty, realistic blockbuster films that won't bring my superheroes into space. And now, like, anything goes with the Marvel movies. And so I'm excited to see, to hopefully see them continue it. And I guess we had that in Thor as well.
I would assume that Iron Man and Captain America would still kind of remain fairly grounded. Yeah. It's going to be more like Thor and Avengers itself that's going to have this, you know, supernatural cosmic elements and stuff like that. But yeah, it's, you know, it is something they can play with now. It's something that's out there. It's something that they can do. And I mean, it makes sense for a movie that you have to have a threat that's bigger than anything these one guys can handle. So you go something that's out of this earth, out of this universe. It should be exciting. Why am I? Okay. Anything else I'm missing before we start talking about characters and action?
I have something random that I want to throw in at some point, so maybe I should do that.
Go on.
So, as someone, like I've said, who likes comics but is not well read in the superhero comics, I was immediately looking for, like, I was like, oh man, what do I read now? What do I read? And I had gotten Infinity Gauntlet, and I was looking for stuff, and my friend had let me look at a bunch of things, and like, I could not get into any of them into the same degree that I was into the Avengers film. And I was like, nothing can feed my, I need more Avengers. I'm just going to have to go again, which I am tonight. But, but I then decided, I was like, you know, maybe if I don't think about seeing the same characters again, but I pick up this Joss Whedon run of Astonishing X-Men, maybe that'll do something. And oh my gosh, that totally scratched the itch that I had. And so if you're like me, and you're kind of looking for the same kind of fix, that's totally something worth diving into. That's all I want to say.
I agree with him, though. That's a very good book, Joss Whedon's X-Men. It's very good.
Yeah, I still do wish that they had some type of system in place where it's like you come out of a movie and like, if you enjoyed The Avengers, check out these comics.
Oh my gosh, they need that so bad, and they try to do it. Like, comics always do it, but they recommend too much. And that's how I always feel when I'm trying to get into Marvel stuff. It's always just too much like stuff to go through, and I just get overwhelmed and quit. Whereas... Yeah. The X-Men thing I picked up, you know, it's it never felt like it's requiring me to read a million other things, and it just kind of picked up the story, and I was able to go with it. But every time I was picking up an Avengers thing, I was just like, man, what is going on? And you know, it's really a shame that they don't have this curated, this is what you buy list, because I think they're losing sales on it, and you know, the fans are fans of the films are pulling their hair out because they want to be fans of the comics, but it's so difficult.
I think, I mean, it depends. Like, I know some comic shops are good with that. They sometimes, but yeah, I understand. Like, if you have like 20 Avengers books out, and this is what we recommend if you check out the Avengers, it's like, yeah, that still doesn't narrow it down for me. I'm like, if I was Marvel, I would re-release a story with Loki and the Avengers in it. I guess the other thing is that the Avengers team in the movie isn't the current Avengers team in the books.
Well, it is for Avengers Assemble, but that's not more reader-friendly at all, to be honest.
So, yeah. Also,
why don't they sell comic books at the actual movie theaters? That's what I've always wondered.
Yeah, that's what they should do.
I think they would do amazing in sales of like, oh, I just walked out of the Avengers. Oh, here's Infinity Gauntlet with that guy that I didn't know. All right, I'll give you $20. Like, come on. Like, isn't that not happening?
I mean, I pointed this out before. I think Batman Begins did something like this. When you got the home release, it came with a little mini comic book that had the first chapter of three stories that influenced the movie. It was like The Man Who Falls, you know, Year One, and I think The Long Halloween. Gotcha. And it's like, you know, like, we'll give you, you can read these, you get, you know, and if you want, you can pick up this story. I think The Man Who Falls is actually a one-shot. So that helped out. But yeah, you know, it's I've always thought that it makes no sense. It's the same thing they do in the cartoons, DC Nation and Marvel Universe. They never tell you, like, okay, like, while you're here, here's some comics you can check out this week. I thought that was going to be the whole point of these whole cartoon jocks for them.
Or even now that, like,
comic books. Because they're full of rape and death.
But that's true.
Even now that stuff like digital comics and, like, Comixology is so popular, like I can imagine, like, you know, the Draft House, especially here in Austin, I can imagine them saying, oh, you know, you bought a pre-sale ticket for Avengers. Here's the first issue of an Avengers comic that we'll send you digitally. And, you know, that's good for Comixology because it gets people downloading their app. It's good for Marvel. It's good for the pre-sale tickets. It's like everyone kind of wins in something like that. And it's so bizarre to me because it seems like such an obvious, the films, superhero films have already done wonders for the comic book industry. It seems like they should push even further to help that happen.
I was going to say, it doesn't do anything for the comic book industry because nobody ever follows up on it. Like Avengers makes $200 million. And I assume you won't see that reflected in May's comic book sales for, like, you'll probably see some trades go up. But you won't take the single issues or the current run of the Avengers do anything decent.
Yeah, well, I do know talking to talked with the guy who ran the comic book shop in Doylestown, my hometown, and I remember him telling me that stuff like Batman and when Spider-Man came, the first Spider-Man came out, like those films really helped bring people into the comic book shops. Buying, you know, not even just superhero comics. Like, they would be like, I saw this movie, like, I want to try out some comic stuff, and he would recommend, you know, some from the movie they saw, but also some comics that, you know, weren't necessarily related to superheroes, so.
Oh, yeah,
So I don't know if you can specifically track it, but
yeah,
even
it
just talking to the one business owner.
It does get people. I've gone because several of my movie theaters are actually right next to comic book shops, and Midtown Comics, which is the biggest one in the city, is near two movie theaters. And I remember coming out of Kick-Ass, and I decided that Kick-Ass was like a pre-screen, and it was like a Thursday, so I decided to pick up my weekly comics there, and the store was jam-packed, and you had like trades of Kick-Ass like all along the walls because people just came out of a movie. And they wanted more, so you kind of put that out there, and people pick up other stuff. But the thing is kind of getting them to go back week after week and not just that one day.
Yeah.
And I hope Digital Comics help that, because you don't have to go to the store. You can wake up at, well, I guess 2 p.m. and pick up your comics for the week. I'm, I'm, I don't use Comicsology a lot. Do they have a subscription model?
I don't believe so. I've never used it if they have any, but I really enjoy Comicsology.
Yeah.
And I actually kind of feel bad because like every year I would go to Free Comic Book Day, but this and last year I didn't because I just used all the digital versions, and I was kind of sad because it's supposed to be about like go out and support your local business owner, but
I would say it works both ways. If it's helping you support Comicsology, they're a business as well.
I guess that's
yeah.
true. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's a great thing. I wish more industries had a free day, free movie day. I didn't check out any movie in theaters for free.
Oh my gosh.
It's going to be crappy amazing. Battleship and Transformers, though. But
Although with the way comics work, it's great because, you know, you get a single issue or like a smaller story. Like free, like that's almost the same as like when they released for free. Remember when Avatar was coming out, the James Cameron film, and they released like the first half hour for free in 3D IMAX and on one day, and it was Avatar Day. So the films have done stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember. I think it was X-Men 3 that released like the first 15 minutes on the internet.
Yeah.
I think, but you know, the problem with that is sometimes you can unsell people on your product. So,
man, I haven't been happy with an X-Men movie in theaters since X2. It's been
awful. You did
First Class.
First Class was okay. First Class was a much better than Wolverine and The Last Stand, but
that's not
that shit I took earlier today is much better than Wolverine.
But yes, back to the Avengers. I mean, really, I think what people came for this movie for was the action. Hmm. And I think it delivered, especially being that they didn't really give away a lot of this movie. Like, I mean, most of the trailers were kind of focused on the climax.
Yeah,
that's what I was kind of worried about, like the trailers were giving away a lot, but it turns out they didn't.
Yeah, it's basically focused.
Whoever the marketing team that edited those trailers did a really good job of showing, like, hey, look, there's exciting stuff in this movie, but not giving away, like, the really good things.
Yeah,
that might be the unsung hero of, like, the entire thing, because how many times does that not happen? And fans are always pissed about it, but, and I'm so glad you mentioned it, because I feel like most people don't mention when they do a good job with it. They just kind of bitch about when they do a terrible job with it, so.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I also think Nolan has done a terrific job with The Dark Knight Rises, as far as, I have no idea what's going to happen in the movie in what order, but you have some idea.
Cool.
The thing is, though, a lot of people these days are conditioned that they need to see most of the movie in the trailer before they go and pay to see the film, whereas the Batman trailer is quite the opposite, where it's hardly telling you anything to get you excited, and some people are just like, oh, I don't know, it's Batman, so I'll go see it, but I'm not sure, because I haven't seen the whole movie.
I disagree.
I mean, there are people, and I think because people complain that the Prometheus trailer shows too much, and it kind of gives away the entire movie.
No, it doesn't. Apparently the newest international one does, which is why I have not watched it.
Trailer should be something that gets you excited to go see the movie, not something that has to explain the entire plot to you.
Look at it this way. The trailers are always an evolving art, if you want to call them that. Like, back in the day, they used to literally give away the entire movie in a trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Tell you the ending.
Yeah, I watch, because I have to watch a lot of these old trailers, like some of the movies we do on Fridays and stuff, to kind of get rules. And it's funny, because we don't have narrators anymore. We don't use them as often. But, like, the narrator will tell you like, how the movie starts, like, the twist at the middle. And they're like, oh, check out this exciting conclusion. And I'm like,
yeah.
You're just kind of giving us the whole thing and you ate it out. It's not even like you're showing it. Like, you're literally telling us what to expect from this movie at this point.
It depends on the film's genre as well. I mean, like, look at something like, again, like Inception with Christopher Nolan or with Looper. Like, if they give you, like, the kind of basic premise and that's it.
Hmm.
Like, I'll be hard pressed after that Looper trailer. You know what the basic idea is and that's it.
And that movie looks awesome.
Yeah.
You know, there was an interesting read, I think it was on Wired a little bit back, about how spoilers actually have been, a study show that a spoiled film for a viewer, they'll actually enjoy the film they know the ending to more because of something about, like, the way we expect things to happen. And seeing that happen, we actually end up enjoying the film more than if we want something to happen. Yeah, it was an interesting read, especially because for me it was like, okay, even if that's true, like, I still don't want to be spoiled because there's still, you get a different thing out of it, you know? You definitely get something out of that surprise in that first viewing, even if the overall enjoyment scientifically is more if I'm spoiled, it's something that I still don't desire at all.
But it feels like that's something for stupid people. Like, I need to know where this movie is going so I can understand what come before it.
Well, I think they were highlighting more of the expectation. It was more like, oh, I know that guy dies.
And that's my point. It's like, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you know, I need to know all the beats so I can understand what's happening and why this is happening instead of, like, enjoying the ride. Like, you know, like, people come out, like, Inception, for example, people come out of, like, was that all a dream? Like, is it, you know, like, we knew, like, okay, it's a fake, you know, he's dreaming the entire time or whatever, or it's Inception. It's like, yeah, it defeats the purpose if you know. And this is, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about comedies, is that I sometimes find comedies hard to rewatch for that reason because I know the beats. And it's kind of like, if you know the setup and the payoff, it's kind of like, it's not as enjoyable if it's
That's how you identify good comedy, though, because something like Arrested Development, I have watched that series like 10 times, and it is funnier every time. And I think Avengers has the same trick where it's that character interaction. It's that because the characters are so well developed that it's funny to watch their situations. And even though they have good one-liners, it's all tied to what you like about them as a character, not just some funny joke someone wrote.
Yeah. And it's something that, you know, we were having a discussion. I agree. It's, if you have a decent comedy that's funny the first time and all you that, then it's not very good comedy. It's just kind of like, oh, this is the obvious joke, so it'll make you chuckle. But if you kind of see it coming, you know, if you repeat the same joke 50 times, it doesn't become funny. It's a really great joke.
That's kind of what I'm dreading with American Pie later. Like, it's just going to be a lot of repeated jokes from the first three films, and if it is,
it's probably not going to.
Is it? Oh, okay. I haven't seen them in a while, so I might not remember them all.
I think in that case, it's kind of a homage to you remember this from 13 years ago? Wasn't it funny?
It's not really a homage if you're talking about yourself. It's more of a, hey, remember this, fuckers? Remember you were a kid? Don't you feel like a kid again? Give us more of your money.
Oh, I saw it for free, so.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, like we were talking earlier, like, that's why Anchorman is such a great comedy, is that it is very much that. You can watch it. Knowing the jokes, you can still watch it, and it's still hilarious.
Yeah.
It's like I find with comedies, it's when they're super quotable that they're more rewatchable. Like, Anchorman's like that. A movie I really love called In the Loop is very much like that. The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
I was going to say, and I guess tying this back, it's like I'm rewatching Justice League because I've been in the mood for more superheroes. And it's kind of like, you know, I've seen this show, I think, through like 5 times by now. And I'm still catching stuff that I didn't miss before. I still find some of the stuff they get through the censors is just genius. It's kind of like the Milky Way. Like, I was watching, I think, Maid of Honor, where Wonder Woman teams up with like that heiress. And she's actually about to get married, and she wants to go out with a bang, and several fists can be arranged. And I'm like, they really got this through in a kid's show, but it's something most kids wouldn't know what it meant until you become an adult, I hope.
Early, the real reason you're rewatching it is because the Avengers film made you want a Justice League film even more, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to deny it. I mean, I like I have no beef with Marvel, but I've always preferred DC's characters, and I would love to see a Justice League film done properly. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we got a ton of great animated Justice League films, and I want to see a live-action Justice League film on the big screen. And, I mean, now that Avengers has been done, why shouldn't a Justice League film, except Warner doesn't have their house in order? They know how to do a Batman film.
It's kind of weird, because, like, DC's owned by Time Warner, which also owns Warner Brothers. So in theory, it should be easier for DC to get it done. Because, like, Marvel Studios have got, like, the characters that are in Avengers in one house, but then they've got other characters that could also be in Avengers films that Sony and Fox have, yet Marvel have still managed to do it first.
I meant more in the sense that in order and that they don't really know what to do with the DC properties.
Yeah.
I don't want to say because we saw what happened when Geoff Johns got involved with Green Lantern, but I think what they need to do is they kind of need a bridge between their comic division and their movie division. Like Marvel has, what is it, Kevin Feige,
yeah, he's kind of like the architect behind it all.
Yeah, and I mean, personally speaking, I would suggest Bruce Timm because he's worked with these characters for 20 years, and he's shown that he has an idea of why they're so important and why they're so iconic. I'm not necessarily saying that he needs to direct it anything, but I think he has a great eye to see what these characters need on screen.
Yeah, well, like, Kevin Feige, he's not really... I don't know how much he's involved creatively, but he's like the guy who's got them all, like, on the same road to the Avengers, doesn't he? And made the Avengers possible. Like, he's been there on all the Marvel Studio films, making sure that all the little Easter eggs that set up the Avengers pay off eventually for the Avengers and stuff. So.
And that's what I mean. They need that one guy. I mean, like, I guess Christopher Nolan's kind of that guy because he's doing whatever he's doing with the Man of Steel. Or he had
I don't think he's doing much of that anymore.
No, he's not. But I think they also said he's going to stay on as the producer for the next Batman film.
Oh, really? Oh, that's quite cool.
Yeah, kind of like Tim Burton did with Batman Forever and Batman and Robin.
That kind of makes me slightly upset, though, because I was looking for... Like, I love the Nolan Batman movies, but I'm looking forward to a very different change of pace. Like I said before, with Marvel going into space, you know, I love watching some of these animated DC films because they have, like, these kind of a more supernatural element with Batman, which, you know, Nolan isn't going to touch. And I really want to see that again. I really want to see that in the live-action films, because I've enjoyed it in the animated ones, and I don't know if Nolan's still super involved with it, then...
I don't think he will be. I think it'll be more, like Tim Burton with the other ones, where it's supposed to, he's just, like, kind of a vanity credit, almost, like a way to get some monies.
Yeah, and I also assume that...
One of the things is they're going to try to build through a Justice League movie, which, after seeing the Avengers... DC is probably kicking themselves in the ass about.
Yeah, I mean, because DC has been making superhero movies for 30 years now.
Yeah, they done fucked up.
There was no reason that they can't... All they have to do is that they started at a much higher point than Marvel did, because Batman and Superman are still kind of more recognizable than, like, Iron Man or Thor would have been.
Yeah, that's true.
So just have like a scene at the end of Superman where Batman shows up and like, we need to speak or something. And you can even do a World's Finest movie first if you need be. But I think that with DC, what they need to do, especially after Green Lantern, is they need to do a Justice League movie first and then spin out the character movies from that, because I don't think they have what it takes to make a solo character movie for out of their characters, or they don't want to try. So get people, you know, kind of like how everybody wants to see a Hulk movie now. If you get somebody... And the person they gravitate towards, you see if you can act them on and do a great movie out of that.
See, but the thing about that is DC had supposedly hired someone to, I forget her name, who was supposed to oversee all their movie division and, like, basically do stuff like that, like, be, like, the Uber producer who gets everything together and gets them on track towards, like, you know, a combined universe. Which, and think about this, how badly Marvel was handicapped by this. And they managed to get that done first because of not having Fantastic Four, not having the X-Men, not having Spider-Man, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And they managed to get their shit together and got it done.
Yeah. And DC has a movie studio attached to
that. They are owned by a movie studio that has the rights to all their characters. They done fucked up. And also spinning off that, if Marvel does not hire Joss Whedon as an overseer type credit, for all their movies from now on, they need to get their head out of their ass.
They need to get him for this Avengers 2.
Yeah, they need to get him not only for that, I think they should get him for something like Bruce Timm with the animated films for DC, where he's not necessarily directing or in charge of any specific one, but he kind of like oversees the whole thing. Guess Joss Whedon to do that. Like, he can be like kind of like Geoff Johns was with the DC Universe where he's like the overseer, basically. Like he helps tie them together, and if something like he can like read the scripts and be like, hey, punch this up a little bit, or you know what I mean?
I like John's on the comics for the most part, but I think Nicholas's biggest beef with him is the fact that he always wants things to be as they were when he was a kid. And I think that was what ruined Green Lantern.
I just meant in the idea of that kind of role, not necessarily...
Oh, no, I know what you mean. I'm just saying that Jeff, he wasn't the right guy for that. I just think he was the hottest person in DC as far as comics went at the time. Mm-hmm. And he has been writing Green Lantern for 4 or 5 years now? So, it made sense. But yeah, I think they need somebody who's kind of divorced from the comics. Not necessarily somebody who doesn't read them, but somebody who isn't really directly involved with them. But somebody who knows them and knows movies.
So Joss Whedon?
I assume Magnolia and Marvel probably has him locked up in a lifetime contract after this weekend.
I think Marvel already have someone like that though in Joe Quesada, because he's like chief creative officer, but I'd much rather it be Joss Whedon.
I think Joe Quesada probably doesn't get as much sway in the movies.
Yeah, because they have that creative committee as well, which Bendis is on, and some other people from Marvel. I think like the president and some other guys. I think they're primarily involved in pre-production and like when they're knocking out the scripts and stuff though.
And so. I think that's the other thing is that you don't necessarily need these people around you because they don't know how to make movies. Mm. So they can be involved at the start, but yeah, get them out of the room when it's like the middle of the movie. Because you could, Iron Man wouldn't really do that in the comic books, but that doesn't work on screen. Okay, anyhow, back to the Avengers. So what was your favorite, I guess the climax would be everybody's favorite action scene.
I personally, because I didn't know this was coming at all, and it didn't last very long, but I really liked the scene in the helicarrier when Thor and Hulk had their little battle thing, because that was just fucking awesome when the Hulk...
the Hulk's did you just say wicked Hulk. Awesome?
I don't know, Maya, but when like go down on Thor, and then Thor just turns around and slams him with his hammer, and it's like slow motion. It's just so cool. And,
I love when the Hulk tries to pick up the hammer too.
Yeah, that was really cool as well.
And then he comes in with a running knee to the face. That was awesome. And I love how they ended with that sucker punch during the climax.
Yeah, that was
nice little
at the cinema laughed. And I've been to 3 screenings, and in each screening, the whole cinema has erupted with laughter at that bit.
Go on.
You know, a film has amazing, amazing action sequences. If I was running through the ones in my mind to try to pick a favorite, and then the Hulk Thor one is mentioned, which I didn't even think of, but. As soon as it was, I was like, oh my gosh, like, yes, that was just as amazing as all the other ones I thought of. And they're really, it just like it's hard to pick who your favorite Avenger is in the film, it's so hard to pick your favorite action scene because they all have something unique. They all have something so interesting to watch. And it just really speaks volumes for how fantastic the film is as a whole.
I love that there was a scene in the climax where it's like an extended cut of like you just going through like the entire team and like one person would do something and it was kind of and I thought that was a fantastic scene.
You've got Black Widow though, with a little handgun while it's like everyone else has got like these really cool weapons and the Hulkster and Black Widow's just with like a little pistol.
Well, she also takes their weapons and uses it against them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very pragmatic.
Yeah, and then there's little scenes like when Thor. No, it's Hulk does the thing where what were the giant robot thingies called?
I don't think they got named.
Okay, but yeah, he takes like a piece of the building and shoves it down his back, and then Thor comes in with his hammer.
Yeah,
and there's a really quick scene where Iron Man and Cap teams up, and he shoots off his beams off the shield.
I loved all the stuff like that because that's what you want to see in a team movie, isn't it? Them working together. It's character stuff as well, and it's awesome.
Of course, the scene, and this is, my friend had the same thing. The scene that everybody loved was when Hulk and Milky, where he's starting to shut down at him. And I had no idea what they said after that scene because the entire theater erupted.
It's a puny god.
Yeah. That was fantastic.
I know we're kind of talking about the action scenes, but I just want to quickly mention the thing with. Actually, no, we can carry on the action. I'll mention it later.
Sorry. What were you going to say?
No, I'll save it for later. Sorry.
I was also going to, I like the, again, the little callback, even though it was to the same scene, is like when Noki finds out he's beaten, he's like, I don't know if it makes any difference to you now, but I take that drink.
Yeah.
Mm. But yeah, I mean, what did you think of the army, the alien invaders or whatever?
The Shiitake.
Because I know I've seen like some criticism, like they weren't really much of a threat.
Well, they blew up New York, even though in the next shot it looked perfectly fine anyway.
But yeah, I mean, I can understand. I mean, they didn't need to be a threat. It was never kind of the intention. Kazuki was their talking man, and he was a threat because he ended up cutting off Coulson, who I did not know I was so fond of. I was so sad when he died.
Fucking Josh, fucking Whedon, killing characters we care about all the time.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, some people again complain about the fact that he got to have like two speeches during his death. Because he had the speech to Oki, and then he had the speech to Fury later on.
Can't you just see, like, the development of the Avengers, and Joss is what, like, alright, who am I allowed to kill?
Yeah.
I imagine, like, him not even being on the list initially, and he's like, ah, come on! Like, no one knows any of these people! And then he's, like, fighting to kill off someone we love, and...
Funnily enough, I don't know if any of you guys saw this interview with him. It's been brought up with this very idea, is that that was not his idea.
Oh, really?
Marvel told him, and he was like, to kill Coulson. He was like, God damn it, I'm going to be blamed for this.
And he is.
That's quite funny.
Funnily enough, when I did watch it with me and my friend, after the movie, I asked my friend Sarah, so when Coulson died, did you in your head just scream, Whedon? She's like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, somebody, granted, there's always going to be fan theories, but somebody said he can come back as, like, what, Drex the Destroyer?
No, I heard the Vision.
Ooh, that'd be quite good there. I've not heard that. What?
No, fuck that.
I thought, no. That'd be awesome.
I mean, I know it's comic books, but I do think it would cheapen his death if they have him come back, but... We shall see.
I just want the Vision in the film.
His first name is Agent. But yeah. And they didn't end up using that gun in that movie, did they? Other than when he shot Ilki.
Nope.
Would have been nice. Almost everybody had, you know, Pepper Potts came back for two scenes. Well, three scenes, I think. Who else was back? The guy, the scientist from Thor. Nobody from Cap.
The voice of Jarvis was back as well, wasn't it? The
mm-hmm, yeah.
Oh, what's his name now? Oh, fuck.
Paul Bettany.
British, yeah, that's it. British guy who voices Jarvis in Iron Man 2.
Did they ever explain why Jarvis is a computer in the movies? Because he's a butler in the actual comics, or he was. Right?
I don't know if there's a reason. I just think it kind of in the Iron Man movies with Tony Stark's workshops and how he's got the tech, you know, like the tech screens, the touch screens. It kind of works better if Jarvis is like this AI that he can interact with whilst he's in the suit, so he has someone to talk to in the suit. It just kind of works better than if he's just a butler who serves him drinks and stuff like that.
I was
like
also going to wonder if any of it has to do with the fact that it would have been similar to the Bruce and Alfred race.
Yeah, that might have been it as well, because people make comparisons between Tony Stark and Bruce Wayne as it is, because they're both rich and superheroes, so they don't need an extra one.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny because it's, I think it was one of the Marvel guys who's like, it doesn't matter if our movies does well at DC, because most fans don't know, and this is kind of true. I was on the train yesterday, and somebody was talking about like, how DC is part of Marvel, and
yeah.
How like, Justice League and Avengers will show up in the next movie. I'm just like, it's nice to think. I mean, it's nice because they have, it's one of the things I just like about talking to comics on Twitter now, is that so many people are just kind of up in arms and angry at each other sometimes, that it's nice to see that some people don't care about that petty stuff. They just want good superheroes. Were there any other scenes that stood out to you folks? I know some people said that their favorite scene was the scene in the Hellcarrier, where it's just like the heroes talking among themselves.
Yeah.
Man, I almost don't want to talk about all the favorite scenes because I'm going to see it again tonight, and I kind of want to be surprised again as they come up. Like, I'm tempted to, like, take my earbuds out right now.
Because
there's so much that, like, it's impossible to run through it all yourself and be like, oh, yeah, that scene, oh, yeah, that scene. But, like, as a group, I'm like, oh, no, the hive mind of us is, like, repeating the whole movie I'm going to see.
I don't necessarily have a favorite scene because I like a lot of them. But one I thought was, like, very well done in terms of acting and whatnot was Black Widow and Loki.
Yeah.
Again, when he calls her a weepy vagina, basically. But no, just hit the turn. First the turn he makes from being very kind of like suave and trying to like, you know, win her over a little bit to just flat out insane spitting and yelling. And then the turn she makes from
crying
and being upset to, oh, so that's what you're doing.
Yeah, it was a great turn of event. And, you know, if that's kind of the role I would expect Batman to play if they ever did a Justice League movie, is that mental manipulator.
But it also plays into her interactions with Banner in that, in the first time when she recruits him, and then later when right before he transforms, he's the only one she can't read or can't work her quote-unquote magic on. You notice,
yeah.
Like, she's all very much about using her sexuality or using her vulnerability to her advantage, and then like turning that off and on depending upon what's needed. And Banner, you can't, because at any moment you do the wrong thing and he snaps.
Well, according to him, he's always angry.
Yeah.
So that was a nice. I thought that was an awesome scene. Another scene that the France erupted on. But I'm kind of. What were your thoughts on Hawkeye?
Amazing the whole time. Any other thoughts about any other of this movie?
I mean, first, I thought it was stupid to kind of turn him evil.
Yeah.
I mean, going into the movie, he's the character with the least amount of screen time in anything. So you just kind of take him out for like the first two-thirds of the movie. And
yeah, I guess that's a little right, I guess.
Because he's the most underdeveloped character,
yeah.
Though. Because even Black Widow was in Iron Man 2 for a little bit, so...
Yeah, and she mentions that, I think.
Yeah.
He's in Thor, but you don't hear. I don't think they refer to him by name at all.
They call him. Well, they refer to him as Clint Barton, I think.
Okay.
I think Coulson does, from my memory. But they probably wanted to leave it open quite a lot because they're going to cover it in either a Hawkeye spin-off film or like a Shield film in the future or something.
Yeah, I guess, but I was just like, you know, he's part of the team. It would have been nice to have him get the same level build that the rest of the team got. But you know, him being evil never really used to anything important, other than the fact that you find out that you can cure Loki's heart control with hitting him really hard in the head. It's a comic book movie. What can you do?
My only real disappointment during the entire film was I thought for such a stellar film it had an extremely mediocre score, and as someone who's really into film and video game music, I was so excited for like, oh, I wonder what the Avengers score is going to be like. Although I was a little cautious because I frankly don't think any of the Marvel films have been scored that great.
No.
The most memorable song from the five movies is the Captain America song.
No, see, I think the little fanfare that the Avengers has, which I can't even remember off the top of my head, is probably the most memorable, because I caught myself humming it a little bit, but I think it was such a disappointment that, like, if they had a strong theme for every character, and then you can weave just hints of that in the Avengers film, it would have tied everything together more. I mean, it's already really well tied together, but it's just me complaining about something I really love. That I was disappointed wasn't up to my standard for it, but
they did kind of do that though in a way because they had a bit of Captain America's theme in there as well.
Yeah,
and
because Alan Silvestri also scored Captain America, and so he did hint at that theme. I was reading an interview with him, but that's the only one he did, and in the interview he kind of like threw some excuses at it, but I think the real reason was that it's really just like not very memorable. Scores for the other films,
but also as well though. There's since you brought up music, there is the scene when Iron Man comes on and he's coming on to AC/DC Shoot to Thrill, which was kind of cheesy, but it was kind of awesome.
They actually put that in the movie where he's like controlling their PA system, so it's not like random background music. It's his intro.
I did smile when that played. It was quite awesome. Yeah, because that's a typical Tony Stark thing to do. So
yeah, that was pretty good. But yeah, I don't know. It's just one of those things where like, on my way to work the other day, I listened to like the Superman score and just how like both the love theme and the main theme of that film are just so amazing. But
yeah, I was also going to say though that has handicapped the franchise because I don't think they've tried to evolve beyond that theme in 30 years. I mean, it's a great theme.
But even Batman had a great theme, and then now it has a great new theme.
Well, Batman's had three themes. He's had the 60s one, he's had the Elfman one, and now he has the Nolan one.
Well, not only that, but there's Batman Forever has like dun 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 dun.
Oh yeah,
that's different than the first Burton Batman. So like, he has always had amazing but like memorable themes. I don't know.
I think that's one of those things where Batman has kind of always gotten the full attention of everybody at DC and Warner. But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of curious to see what they do with the Man of Steel, because I don't think they're going to go back to Williams's Superman theme. It would be interesting to see what they actually do come up with for it.
Hopefully they
could be rock and edgy. Could it be the dude who did the score for 300?
Yeah, actually, it probably will be. And he writes good scores. Like, I thought the Watchmen score was fantastic.
Yeah, Tyler was.
Yeah, so yeah, that could actually be really cool.
It should be interesting. But yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think, like, Spider-Man has a decent one, Batman has one. I don't remember X-Men one. Like, what
X-Men 2's X-Men 2's got a good film. A good theme, sorry.
Yeah, and then that was done by John Ottman, who also did Superman Returns, although he reused the Williams themes for that. But I can't remember the X-Men theme off the top of my head, but I remember it being more memorable than any of the recent Marvel stuff.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of which ones had good ones in this whole like resurgence.
There was a time where it was like most superhero movies had, because that was like a thing, like you had to have your memorable superhero theme, because wouldn't you?
Because it started with Superman, didn't it?
Because Superman had it, and that's
And then Batman had it.
And then now they're just kind of like, eh, whatever, we need some music, generic music, here you go, generic music.
But I think part of it is also that they use actual songs. Like the song that Iron Man comes into is kind of associated with the movies. I think the song that people associate Captain America with, the Star Spangled Man, and stuff like that. Spider-Man's the same way, where most of the themes were the like, Vindicated and Hero and stuff like that that played at the end of the movie.
Well, he does have, for the first two movies, it's Danny Elfman, and it's quite, it's a good score, actually. I like the Danny Elfman
music. They're memorable.
Like, I don't remember any cues from the Spider-Man movies where I was like, oh, that was great.
But it still had a strong theme. Like, even if you can't remember it off the top of your head now, like, those films, like, when they played the theme and you were watching it, you're like, yeah, there's the Spider-Man theme coming in. Mm. Whereas, like, if they put in the Iron Man theme, you wouldn't even notice it.
I can't hear anyone.
I don't remember Rocket having a memorable one at all. I like the Avengers one, though.
Yeah, the Avengers does, to be fair, they do have a theme for the Avengers, and it is the most memorable theme of all of the recent Marvel flicks, but it's still, I feel like they've always kind of missed an opportunity with that recently. Anyway, we're probably going on far too long about my little...
music is a part of the movies.
It is.
Speaking of music, that Soundgarden song pisses me off.
The one that they gave away for free on iTunes.
Yeah, because it's an amazing opening riff. And then, like, you know, that's the main riff of the song. But the verses are so fucking boring. It's like two completely different songs put together, and it's just like, all right, this is really awesome. Oh, no, I'm going to sleep.
Also, speaking of the Spider-Man films, though, Nicholas, the new one should have an even more memorable theme than the last one, because I doubt James Horner is going to go with the Danny Elfman theme, but it's also James Horner who writes some of the most memorable. Yeah, it's James Horner's
doing
it.
Wow, I didn't know that.
It's an interesting choice.
I think the most recognizable Spider-Man theme is still the one from the 60s cartoon show. They reference it in every movie.
Yeah.
Spider blood. Genetically modified by your father, spider blood.
They should have went with the Avengers theme song from the TV show. But apparently the TV show doesn't even use that one either, so.
Oh, don't mention that. I hate that intro now. It was so cool.
It's the
Avengers assemble.
Well, now it's like, and there came a day unlike any other where the Earth's mightiest heroes found themselves. It's basically that, we have to remind them that, you know, who these characters are every episode. It's,
I'm going to blame Jeff Loeb for that.
Yeah, I was going to say, Marvel doesn't seem to have faith in their cartoons, because they're really going to butcher the Avengers this season, which I hate.
That's a rumor. But I was thinking about it. So long as they tie up all the plot threads, and there is quite a lot of them, they've tied them all up by the end of season two, then I think I won't care as much. Then I just don't want them to be still open at the end of season two, because that's what pissed me off about Spider-Man in the 90s, because they finished it off as like, yes, you're going to find Mary Jane now, but we're not going to make any more episodes, so you won't find out what happens next. It's like, yeah, fuck you.
I meant that they're doing the first 13, and then I guess the second half of the series is going to be standalone episodes. It won't have the overarching plot, because Jeff Loeb doesn't think kids can follow overarching plots, so.
Even though Ultimate Spider-Man, which he has more of a hand in, does have overarching plot.
Really have an overarching plot. Like, well, I know it has the Shield stuff, and it has the Venom stuff.
There's Norman Osborn as well, though, isn't there? So.
He hasn't really done much. I mean, most of
and Dr. Octopus, who's usually...
I was about to say, it's been mostly Doc Ock, but even it's still kind of been like, you can watch every episode on its own, and you don't have to see what came before or after so far.
You know what we're also missing that establishes the main theme? I just thought of this. I linked in the chat the theme to the Danny Elfman Spider-Man theme, and it actually made me like rage inside, because I was like, man, why doesn't the Avengers have like, or why did the new Marvel movies not have stuff like this? And if you remember,
Danny Elfman is too busy writing terrible music for terrible films by Tim Burton, who's terrible.
Well, listen though. Like, if you remember, like Batman or Spider-Man, those films had these sequences with those opening title sequences where they would play the main theme and like spin you around through the credits and like a web and have like stuff going on, and like that's what drilled that theme into you, and that's what forced them to write a theme, because you need the music to really stand alone in an opening title sequence like that. And so maybe that's part of the reason, because that's not as popular anymore to have that sequence.
I was going to say the other thing is, and I could be mistaken, maybe you folks have better memories than I do, it's like there's like no really iconic theme when they're together for the first time standing on the streets. Like, you would think that would be the part where the score kind of swells up and you get like this iconic cue, and I don't remember the music for that scene at all.
Neither do I, but probably because I was too busy nerding over the image.
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of... if you think about it, like the Batman, like he mentioned the opening credits, but the Batman theme really kicks into high gear when they're kind of panning up and you see him standing on top of the building against the moonlight.
I'm gonna hum the Avengers theme in a second. I'm looking
see
it up
if we can
for
guess
you.
It. It's, you know, and I, like Anthony said, that wasn't the moment you waited for, the moment when they're all on screen together, standing side by side, and the camera spinning around them. I mean, granted, they kind of gave it away in the trailers, but
since John mentioned that he was disappointed with music, the only thing I was disappointed with, and this is a really like comic book nerdy thing to say, but Captain America never said Avengers Assemble, which I was quite gutted about, because I really wanted him to, and I was like, what? No.
I noticed that too, like, when I think Tony was the one that Cap take it, I was expecting him to say Avengers Assemble or something, and he's like, you do this, you do that, and then Hulk smash, you get that awesome line, but I'm like...
They're saving that for the sequel, when he text messages to everybody, and then there's just this, a montage of them all looking at their phones, and just says in big capital letters, Assemble.
I was going to say, it could be like their little ID cards in the cartoon. It's kind of like Battleship. I watched the trailers and I'm so disappointed. They have to say, you sank my battleship in the entire
trailer. I don't think that line's in the film either, actually.
That's like the
only thing. Oh, God, if that's in the movie, I give up on humanity.
I don't think it is in the movie.
That has to be in. I mean, it's bad enough.
I mean,
I
haven't seen Battleship, the movie, so I don't know.
But... that should have been in it. That should have been the first thing they wrote in the script. You sank my battleship.
There is supposed to be a scene in Battleship where they're going B4, and you know, like as if they're playing the board game. But like I said, I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
I did read an interview with Joss Whedon that they were looking for a time to put in Avengers Assemble, and they really did try to look for it, but they thought it didn't fit anywhere. And they were going to put it at the very end of when they run through all of the characters, like spinning that shot that's in the trailer, it's the money shot. They were going to put it at the end of that, but then that was the only spot they could get to fit, but then they also thought, well, why would they say Avengers Assemble after they already assembled? And so they cut it.
It would have been better when Hulk showed up because Iron Man wasn't there yet, so he could have, like, if they had them in different scenes in, like, Avengers Assemble, so they all came together instead of, like, Iron Man just kind of showing up. Like, oh, what was he? I'm going to bring a party to you.
Well, I will hum the Avengers theme now, because that's a good place to start, apparently. It was dun, 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 dun. There you go, right? Now you know it. Still, though... shouldn't have to look it up, but it just came out last weekend.
Yeah, I was about to say, even humming it, I kind of lost it already.
I can't even remember. The thing about it, too, is, like, I looked it up on YouTube, like, the track is the Avengers theme, where they basically just play that thing that I just hummed, like, 75 times in a row, and that's probably the only reason that I even remembered it a little bit, was just because they just continue to play it over and over and over again.
I was going to say, I mean, just really quickly to wrap up and stuff like that. I mean, what do you see with the sequels? Not necessarily the Avengers 2, because they kind of hinted at where they want to go with that. But, like, what do you see with the next line of Marvel films, like Iron Man 3, Thor 2, Captain America 2?
With Thor 2, I'm hoping they expand on the cosmic stuff even more and have Battery Bill in the film and Sutter with the... some of the Walt Simons and stuff. That'd be awesome.
I could see Thor being, again, like with the Avengers, being the actual direct lead into Avengers 2. Like you said, with the cosmic stuff, but more like setting up Thanos. Because they showed the Infinity Gauntlet in Asgard's treasure room thingy.
I don't think it's actually seen in shot, but it is in the...
Oh, it is. It is, baby.
Is it?
Yeah, it's very brief. Very brief glimpse.
Oh, fuck, now I have to watch 4 again.
You need an excuse for that.
Like, if you have to know where it is and look for it to see it, but it is definitely in there.
Oh, okay.
I think, well, we all know Iron Man 3 is going to be very much disconnected from the Avengers storyline, but, like, much more... I mean, it's Shane Black. Shane Black knows what the fuck he's doing. That dude's great.
Yeah.
And Captain America, I think it's going to be closest to a direct sequel to the Avengers. And that it's going to play off what happened in this movie and Cap's reaction to being in the modern world now and stuff.
Mm.
If they start going down the Winter Soldier storyline, I will flip my shit so hard.
Yeah, I think what they all need to do is you know, and Marvel has come out and said that Captain America 2 is going to be the closest kind of tied into the Avengers now, but they still need to, all the films need to be setting up Avengers 2 more than... the previous films had set up Avengers 1, so like they need.
I don't. That's, I think that they have Avengers because I think I don't necessarily agree with this, but I know some people had the issue that like, Thor and Captain America, especially, kind of felt like they were hampered by the fact that they had to set up the Avengers movies as well.
I wouldn't say Captain America or Thor. I would say more
Iron Man 2.
I think people thought that initially, but now that Avengers is out, like, I think looking back on those movies, I'm so happy that they do tie in as much as they do.
Well, it's not that they tie in as much as they do, is that it was very awkward in Iron Man 2. Like, that movie, which as much as I like that and I really defended it when it first came out, it's very lackadaisical and just kind of wanders all over the place. If it had been more focused in what it was doing in terms of setting up the Avengers and then also having its own plot, that would have been one thing. But I think it was very much hazard.
I also feel like with Iron Man 2, they were kind of spinning their wheels with the Avengers because, like, the Hulk didn't really have any major tie-ins to the Avengers other than Stark showing up, and Cap and Thor weren't out yet. It was kind of like Iron Man's out before these movies, but we haven't made any progress on the Avengers because we haven't introduced any of the other characters. And even in this film, like, the Avengers Initiative, that was what the main thrust of the five films or whatever, has been discarded at the start of this movie. It's been like a year since the end of Thor, and that project has been shadowed, so.
Oh, like, getting away from just those direct sequels, you're going to have other ones that set up that tie in somehow. Like, apparently Doctor Strange is the next one. They want to fast track.
God, I hope so.
I suppose right now, Benedict Cumberbatch for Doctor Strange. Who else? Edgar Wright recently tweeted a pic of something he received in the mail, which was an Ant-Man thing.
Yeah, that was exciting.
Back on the slate. I was just reading, they've been talking a while about doing Alias, the Jessica Jones thing, as a TV series. That's been in development, and then apparently that will be directly tied into the Marvel movie universe, and will feature characters like Luke Cage and Ms. Marvel and things like that.
So, it's going to be an exciting, 2 years, I guess? Because Avengers, when is Avengers 3 2 out? Is it 2015?
There's no release date yet.
Oh, okay.
Probably 2015.
Because I know they went Thor and Cap 2014 and Iron Man's 2013.
No, 4-2's out next year. It's just out later in the year.
Oh.
Next year there's Iron Man 3 and 4-2, but 4-2 is out either September or October, I think. And Iron Man is out. Iron Man is the big summer release.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then Cap is actually out in like April, right?
The year after, in 2014. Yeah, I think so. And then there's also another one scheduled for 2014. They've just not announced what it is yet. But like Nicholas said, it's probably going to be Doctor Strange or Ant-Man.
It's going to be the Hawkeye Hulk team-up movie.
See, what they should, instead of giving like either a Hawkeye solo movie or a Black Widow solo movie, they should make a S.H.I.E.L.D. movie, which
that's
has
the,
Nick
apparently
Cage.
Apparently that's the plan at some point.
Yeah.
Sam Jackson has talked about that.
Yeah. Nick Fury, Hawkeye, Black Widow, and Maria.
I think it's really funny that when I initially found out that Samuel Jackson had signed on for 9 movies, I was like, wow, that's so many. And now I'm like, is that enough?
Because he's already been
in
like 4.
He should have signed on for more. That wasn't a good deal for Marvel.
Ruffalo just signed on for 6, hasn't he?
He's done 6 of them, right?
Yeah, he's already done so many.
Iron Man 1 wasn't part of the deal, I don't think. He signed it.
Oh, really?
Iron Man 2 was the first one in the deal. But then he was
He
was in 4 in Captain America for like, less than 5 minutes in each film. But they're classed as one of the films. So
They should have signed him on for screen time. They should have been like, you need 600 minutes of screen time. Most of that will be in the Avengers, but
what
5 here and there.
And we're going to roll over your minutes.
No. So I think Chris Evans has got a 7-picture deal or something like that. I don't know.
Wow, really?
I'm quite curious to see if they make an Iron Man 4. Actually, I know Iron Man 3 is not even out yet, but what they do with Iron Man after the third film? Like, if they just wait till the Avengers 2 or if they carry it on? But that's a while away yet, so we don't need to think that far ahead.
I assume that they're gonna do. They probably do it like how you did it now, where you kind of get a Thor, Cap, Iron Man, maybe Hulk, or a S.H.I.E.L.D. movie, then Avengers, and then do another group of that, then another Avengers.
I wonder when audiences will get burnt out of this.
They're not going to get burnt out with superheroes.
They're going to get
burnt out. No, I mean, with this, Like, even people were burnt out with the Spider-Man 3, and then they were rebooting it. They got burnt out with the Batman franchise, and they reboot it. Like, that happens.
I don't think people got burnt out with the Batman franchise. I think the Batman franchise took a giant nosediving quality.
Yeah, and with Spider-Man, it wasn't necessarily burnt out. It was that the studio decided, oh, fuck it, we're going to just start over. Burn it down!
Because it was
working on a sequel. They'd been having...
it was because they had that really ridiculous, you have to get this out in a year.
Yeah.
Because they needed it out last year, I guess, and they weren't going to really end. And then they're like, okay, you know what, we're going to scrap the whole thing. And then they give them the next year. I'm like, why didn't you just give this to Raimi?
I feel like if the Avengers films now, like Avengers, and then 2 and 3 or however many they make, if those stay strong, I think they can pull it off for quite a while. Because now, I didn't even like the first Captain America all that much at all. And now I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't wait for Captain America 2. And even if I don't like that, I'll be like, oh my goodness, I can't wait for this thing. Just because of that essential bit now. The film that was on the back burner is like, oh, Avengers is coming. Like, that now is the centerpiece where everything works around.
Yeah, I think what people might get burnt out of is if you start doing a bunch of characters where, like, you have like six or seven superhero movies coming out every summer.
Well, I know Marvel said... a year or two ago, their plan is to have two films a year out, one in the summer, and then maybe, like what they're doing next year, and then just have two films a year out. And what I think they should do is, if they're going to do two films a year, one should be a sequel, and then the other should be something new. Doctor Strange film or something.
Yeah, I just feel like at some point you're just going to run into characters. Like, I know people have that same complaint with some of the Marvel characters, but you are going to kind of run into a case where it's like you have a bunch of characters that nobody's really going to care about, and these people won't be in Avengers, so you really won't have anything to latch on to.
Yeah.
I do like the idea of juggling two in one for a lot of these, more so than they did like Black Widow and Iron Man and Hawkeye and Thor, but like you guys were suggesting with like Hulk and Hawkeye as like a buddy picture thing, or Hulk and Iron Man or something like that, because I think, you know, especially when we talked about it at the beginning with Hulk not being able to stand alone as well with in a film, I think that'll kind of help, because now it's going to get to the point where it's like, oh, we have so many people, especially if they want to add Ant-Man and Wasp to the Avengers next time, it's just going to be like overloaded with, you know, you can't have three movies about every single one of the 10 Avengers that they end up having, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, you also kind of want to build a threat, and you don't want a threat that's, like, six movies away.
Because then all of a sudden you have the problem that I have with jumping into the comics. And then you can't have that problem with... You can't have that same problem with the films, because you need to sell a lot more tickets than you do issues of comics to keep a film open.
Yeah, like, you don't want to have to watch 25 films to see Avengers 3.
They do have to keep it, like, streamlined and tight continuity and not...
Which I guess is why they didn't do like a Black Widow and Hawkeye or S.H.I.E.L.D. movie before the Avengers.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think I would even go with like 4, because I don't think we really need Iron Man 2. at least not before the Avengers. I just think they needed to keep, because it was 5 years between Iron Man and Avengers, they needed to keep Tony Stark busy. But yeah, I think, you know, like 3 or 4 movies is kind of ideal. Because, like, you don't want everything to be Harry Potter. You don't need to have, like, a 7-movie marathon to get up to the last one. But yeah, I mean, that was the Avengers. Apparently we all loved it. I'm sure we'll see it more than once. Anthony, I think, is on his 3rd time?
I've seen it 3 times, and there's a fair chance I'll probably see it again at some point.
I have seen it twice.
I am going to see it twice. John's seen it tonight as of this recording for the 2nd time.
Yeah. When it by the time this comes out, I would have seen it twice. But my knowledge that I was speaking on was only a one-time seeing it knowledge. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. And like you said before, there's really nothing else in May to stop you from seeing Avengers like 50 more times.
Yeah.
Just go see it every weekend.
Only my bank account is stopping me from doing that.
Yeah, well... Just whatever you do, don't go see Battleship, because... Yeah.
See, isn't that what's going to happen, though? Like, people are going to be like, oh, should we see that new Men in Black movie? They get to the theater, they're like, man, Avengers is still playing. screw it, let's just go see that.
Yeah, I could see Avengers being number one in the box office for, like, the next 3 weeks. basically up until Men in Black comes out.
Yeah, Men in Black will probably be long enough where Men in Black will take it down, but only because they'll slowly get less every weekend. But I think next weekend's going to be really good for them all over again.
What is out this weekend? Oh, this weekend.
Dark Shadows.
And can you guys even see Dark Knight Rises grossing more than Avengers at this point?
I think it's a possibility, but I don't really think it's a discussion I want to have right now.
It's apples and oranges. They're two different type of movies.
Yeah, I think...
Yeah, that's why I'm not... A lot of people are saying, like, Avengers is the best superhero film ever made, and it's better than The Dark Knight, and I'm just like, I'm not willing to give that opinion at this point.
It's a different category of superhero.
I think what somebody said is, like, the Avengers is the best superhero movie made, and The Dark Knight is the best film about superheroes.
There you go, that makes sense. Did we lose connection again?
No, we're still here. I was just saying that makes sense because I think a lot of people, and this is part of the reason people have doing a Justice League and Nolan's universe, is that Batman is so grounded in reality, where it's like, it's a normal world where a superhero exists, where the rest of it is like, it's a superhero world in our world. Like, you don't see alien invasions in The Dark Knight Rises.
Well, you haven't seen the film yet, Earl, so you never know.
Yeah, I can't wait for the credits, after credits tag on that, where Sam Jackson shows up and tries to get Bruce Wayne to join his Justice League initiative.
See, you're joking, man. But that would be awesome if that happened.
I thought DC was going to do it the other way, when they kind of hinted at it with Green Lantern and Amanda Waller, where they would kind of set up checkmate.
Didn't they kill her off, though? Or it looked like they did.
I think she survived. They show her survive.
Can we just ignore Green Lantern to happen?
I think that's what they're going to do now. But
Green Lantern to DC is kind of like what Ang Lee's Hulk was to Marvel, in a way, where it's just probably, for the most part, just going to get ignored.
Yeah, I think, because I thought they were going to set it up where, like, they set up a threat first, where they kind of have a checkmate or something, or like a superhero, you know, a supervillain organization, and it's something so big that the heroes have to come together, but Green Lantern bombed financially and critically, so I assume they're not going to pursue that route anymore. But I think we are really nearing like 2 hours at this point. So I want to thank John, Anthony, and Nicholas for joining us this week. This has been episode 94.
Peace.
Thanks for having me.